Good evening, everybody. Let me start again. Good morning, everybody. Here it's 9 o'clock in the morning here in Western Australia, and we're here at the Dharmaloka Centre. And as you can see, we're all set up to do a live streaming event here today of our wonderful WAISAK Day. WAISAK Day, of course, is one of the biggest days in the Buddhist calendar, and usually this hall is teeming with people. And certainly over the whole day we have people coming and going, perhaps even thousands of people come in and out on a normal day. But today, with the COVID crisis that we've got, there is really just myself, Ajahn Brahm, and a very, very dedicated AV team sitting up in the back. We have Martin up there, who is the head of our AV section, and we have Colleen, who is the technician for today. And I think even in the background I can hear his voice, but I can't see him. He is Jake Mitra. And Jake has really done some wonderful work on our AV facility to make sure that that this whole day goes as good as we can. We have even got a couple of moving cameras today that we can follow Ajahn Brahm around when he actually does the circumambulation later on. So we have a big program for today. There's going to be two sessions live streamed today. The first session will go from now, 9 o'clock, until 11 o'clock. And then this afternoon, again, from 3 o'clock till 5:30. So we're going to start off in a moment with taking the three refuges and the five precepts. And then Ajahn Brahm will then continue to give a Dharma talk. And then we're going to be all together just in doing a guided but sitting meditation. You'll be doing that at home. And then we'll be taking the three refuges and the five precepts, and then some Paritta chanting by Ajahn Brahm. And then he'll go off and have his lunch. He has been eating over this period. That's been very, very wonderful to see how all of our members and supporters have been there to provide food and to do the normal things that they've been doing in dropping food off at the monasteries, in all of our monasteries, and keeping our monks and nuns happy and
fat.
And Ajahn Brahm was just saying fat. I don't think that's really quite true, though. In the afternoon, from 3 o'clock, there will be a Dharma discussion with Ajahn Brahm, and Venerable Hasapanna will be here at that particular point in time. And they'll be both here to answer your questions. So if you have any questions at all that you would like to ask, you can type them in, write them in, and Ajahn Brahm and Ajahn Hasapanna will be here to answer those questions. And then between 4:30 and 5 o'clock there will be a circumambulation of the Buddha statue. And then after that there will be new Buddhists taking the three refuges and the five precepts. And I've just heard that there are 77 people that are that have put their names down to do this today, to take the three refuges and the five precepts and really officially come out as Buddhists. So without further ado, I'll now hand over to Ajahn Brahm, and we can start the morning's proceedings.
Thank you, Dennis, and also to everybody listening and looking online. Just a happy WAISAK Day to you all. Even though this is not the full moon day yet, the full moon day of WAISAK is midweek in our calendar here. It's on Wednesday, but nevertheless, it's very difficult for people to find time off at this time of the year. So we always hold our WAISAK ceremonies on the nearest Sunday, and that nearest Sunday is today, on the 3rd of May. And on this day, it's also, interestingly, if I'm not correct, in Australia anyway, Mother's Day. In the sense, is that correct, Dennis? Mother's Day. Yes, it is, yeah. Yeah. And next week. Or somewhere, anyway. But nevertheless, it's nice to know that we're celebrating this day on a day where we celebrate respect and gratitude for many other beings as well, such as our mothers. If it's not Mother's Day in your state, at least it's the day we pay special respects to our male children, our sons, because it's called Sunday. Ha ha ha. It's one of the great advantages of giving a talk in an empty hall, because I don't get discouraged by all the groans of people listening to these old jokes. But nevertheless, it's a very holy day. So we usually started off in a good way by giving the three refuges and the five precepts to those who wish to keep the five precepts today. And those five precepts, as I hope you would know, is not intentionally taking the life of another living being, not taking what's not given to you, in other words, not stealing, and not committing adultery, and not sort of lying, and also not taking any alcohol or non-medicinal drugs for the day. Those are the basic five precepts. So hopefully that everyone listening today can actually take those five precepts for today. And the eight precepts is something a bit more, and the eight precepts is making sure, have we got some good sound there? Yes, okay, yeah. For the eight precepts, it's the third precept is not just not committing adultery, but just moving away from all types of sexuality, and almost like living like a monk or a nun for the day. And also the sixth precept is not eating in the evening. So we just have our meals in the morning time, and lunch time is just before midday. And in the afternoon, evening and night time, we can still have things like juices and cups of tea and even cheese and chocolate. It depends on where you live. And those are allowables if you really need them for the afternoon or evening or night time. So it's not that hard to do without a meal in the afternoon or evening. I've been doing that for the last 45 years, or for almost 46 years now. And still, I don't lose weight. And the next precept is not wasting one's time in entertainment by watching TV or radio or movies, and not singing or dancing, not wearing cosmetics, which just hide the reality of who you really are. In other words, just coming close to a sense of truth, taking away the opportunity to watch movies and stuff. So instead of escaping from life, we have the opportunity the whole day to come closer to life, to be here, without any of these modern ways of escaping from the real world, just for a day. And lastly, not using luxurious furnishings. It's very simple teachings. And so, those are the eight precepts for those who wish to keep those eight precepts. So, we usually do this in front of the whole audience here on a Waysak day, at the very beginning of the day. It's our tradition. So I'm going to pretend there are people here to receive these precepts from me. And even if you don't understand their meaning, don't understand the Pali terms, I would explain it in English one more time, just before you take it. So you always begin with the Namo Tassa three times, which is a worship of the Buddha. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. That is the homage to the Lord Buddha, whose birth, enlightenment, and final passing away we are remembering today. And then we go for the refuge, the triple refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Which means I go for refuge to the Buddha. I go for refuge to the Dhamma. I go for refuge to the Sangha. For the second time I go for refuge to the Buddha. For the second time I go for refuge to the Dhamma. For the second time I go for refuge to the Sangha. For the third time I go for refuge to the Buddha. For the third time I go for refuge to the Dhamma. For the third time I go for refuge to the Sangha. That completes the traditional three refuges. I will now give the five precepts. And those who want to take the eight precepts, you can just be quiet, while those who resolve to keep the five precepts for at least a day, do so. Panatipata viramanisikapadang samadhiyami. We undertake the precept to refrain from intentionally killing living beings. Adina dana viramanisikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking what is not given. In other words, stealing. Kame sumichachara viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct, especially adultery. When I have a partner, I'll be faithful to them. Musawada viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from lying. Sura mirayamaja pramadatana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking alcohol or non-medicinal drugs which distort my mind and are a cause for lack of wisdom. Now I give a little blessing. The consequences of determining five precepts. Imani panchasikapadani silena sukating yanti silena boga sampada silena nibuting yanti tasma silang visodaye. Which means these precepts, they lead to a happy abiding. They lead to good, well, even wealth. And they lead to stillness, cessation. That's why they should be practiced. And now those who wish to take the eight precepts, I'll start again from the beginning, from the first precept, only because the third precept is different for you, as well as the extra precept of 6, 7, and 8. Panatipata viramanisikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from intentionally killing living beings. Adinadana viramanisikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking what is not given. In other words, stealing. Brahmacharya viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from all sexual conduct. Not just misconduct, but also sexuality Musawada viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from false speech, such as lying. Sura mirayama japamadatana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking alcohol or non-medicinal drugs, which are the cause for perverting, distorting my mental faculties and lead to much heedlessness. Vikala bhojana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from eating in the period from noon, which is the solar noon. It's not always 12:00 by the clock, solar noon, halfway between dawn and sunset, dawn and the setting of the sun. To taking that in the afternoon, evening, night time, until dawn of the next day. Nacha Gita Vadita Visukha Dasana Mala Ganda Vilepana Dharana Mandana Vibhusana Tana Viramani Sikapadang Samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from dancing, singing, going to shows, listening to music, or these days that would apply to TV or any entertainment which is on the internet, and also refrain from wearing adornments, jewelry, even makeup, which is not medically necessary. I undertake the precept to refrain from that. Ucha sayana mahasayana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from using luxurious, high, you may even say pompous, seats and bedding, to use only simple furnishings while I'm taking and keeping the 8 precepts. It does not mean that to go to sleep tonight you have to sleep on the floor. You can if you wish. A simple bed is fine, but nothing luxurious. Those are the 8 precepts. And these 8 precepts also, they lead to a happy future. They lead for your wealth, because we don't waste so much in our life. And they lead to this beautiful cessation of freedom. That's why you're encouraged, whenever you can, to keep those 8 precepts. And for the last 2600 years, since the time of the Buddha, people have been keeping these 5 precepts and 8 precepts, and especially on Vaisak Day, so many people throughout the world have been for so many hundreds of years, 2.5 millennia, have been determining these 5 precepts and 8 precepts to guide their day as a gift to the Lord Buddha out of remembrance, gratitude. The Buddha encouraged us to do this. And so anyone we really respect, anyone whose wisdom we worship, in other words, worship means we find worth in it, we want to try and follow their advice, however we can, whenever we can. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So those are the taking of the three refuges and the eight precepts. Three refuges, five precepts and eight precepts. So please, if you can't keep those precepts for any reason whatsoever, it may be that, you know, some medical reason, or because of the family in which you live, or because you have to go to work and the work is very demanding physically, then it's fine to be able to even actually keep seven precepts or six precepts or whatever. It's not something which people are going to be criticizing if you break something. This is just an encouragement. An encouragement in what we call renunciation. Giving up, letting go of desires, rather than following desires. Simply because there are two types of freedom to be found in this world. One is called the freedom of desire, where you can come and go wherever you want, to do whatever you want, to get whatever you want, to enjoy whatever you want. And, of course, that type of freedom is common and normal. But the other type of freedom is what we call the freedom from desire. So desire, wanting, craving, is not something which controls you. You can say no to it. You can restrain and renounce. And that's what these precepts do. If you cannot renounce, restrain for 24/7 for all your life, like monks and nuns are required to do, the very least, one day a year, on a Vaisak day, or another special day of the year. It could be a birthday, it could be a full moon day, a special day. We can renounce to try what it's like to have the freedom from desires. Where you're sitting and there's nothing which you need in this world. Nothing you want. Sitting here perfectly at peace. Because desires, they just go past you. They don't drag you and possess you and make you do what they want to do. It's a freedom from desire, otherwise called contentment. And just looking at the response which people have to things like COVID, where they're stuck in rooms, in their houses, even in five-star hotels, and they find it's like being in prison. When I heard that, it reminded me of that little simile of what is the difference between, say, a good Buddhist monastery and a prison. Because when you compare the facilities and the lifestyle of monks in Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine, that's the only real monastery, that's the only monastery which I really know, because I live there and I've been there for over 36 years now. So I know that obviously very well. And it's quite austere compared to life in a prison. We only eat once or twice a day. And we don't have such a choice of food, and there's no TV. Most of the monks sleep on the floor. Oh, there's so many things you can say just how simple it is. Or some people would confuse that simplicity with austerity. How austere it is compared to even the severe prisons in Australia. And of course I've been into many of those prisons teaching. But it doesn't matter. There's still a huge waiting list of people trying to get into monastery. And a long waiting list of people trying to get out of jail. What's the difference? A monastery and prison. In a monastery, the communities there, the monks, the nuns. They want to be there. In a prison, they want to be somewhere else. In a prison, desires are still there. In a monastery, we're growing freedom from desire. So I often think, I remember just my cave, the little cave in which I live in Bodhinyana Monastery. And in that cave, there's hardly anything there. There's no computer in the cave, no TV, there's no music, there's no books. It's just the mattress on the floor, my meditation cushion, a bottle of water, flashlight, and a clock. That's all. That's my possessions. I wouldn't want it any other way. So little, but so free. It reminds me, this is the freedom from desire which we're celebrating. Contentment. Peace. You don't need much to have that peace. So, today we're celebrating the three great things about Vaisakh. And sometimes people want to know which is of those three events, the birth, the enlightenment, and the final passing away, which was the most important, the most things which bring sort of goosebumps to you. And many people would often say there was the place where the Buddha became enlightened, at Bodh Gaya. But to me, I always think the most greatest place, the one which is top of the list, if we want to have a list, the places to worship and revere, was in Kushinara, where the Buddha said his final bye-bye to samsara, to left with nothing remaining. But before we get to the end, you can start at that beginning, and that beginning where the Buddha was born into this world. And there at the place called Lumbini, such a simple place in the middle of a forest where the Buddha was born. And according to the tradition, Edward, as soon as he was born, could actually walk 7 steps and make a statement, could actually speak, "This is my last life. I am the chief, the best." That's a strange thing for a newborn child to say anything at all, let alone those words. But I was trained as a theoretical physicist at Cambridge. And a theoretical physicist has to put aside all the theories and follow the facts, follow the logic. It seems that it should not be possible that a newborn baby could speak. But in my life of being open to strange phenomena and being able to investigate some of those strange occurrences of life, I have come across cases, authentic cases told to me by parents who have nothing to gain from lying, and whose very demeanour and way of speaking gives me the sense that they're telling the 100% truth of their child speaking. And of course, one of those cases which I've mentioned a few times was of a young married couple here in Perth, Western Australians, many years ago now, who weren't Buddhist. I think you'd call them free thinkers. They didn't go to a church or a mosque or a temple or anything. But their second child, when it came home from the hospital, spoke twice. The first time when it spoke, that the mum and dad thought they were both imagining things. The words were a response to this kid's newborn baby, elder brother, who said good night to his young baby brother. And the baby brother said good night back. And the first time they thought it was imagination, or maybe just, you know, some trick of the wind. But the second time they were paying full attention, 100% mindfulness, as the baby spoke again. Said good night, Peter, to his elder brother. It was only a few days old. Should not be possible, but it happened. And there's been many other cases since that time. So sometimes I wonder, as a scientist, did that actually really occur? Maybe it did. But anyhow, our memory of our past lives, and where we come from, which is where that newborn child could get the ability to speak, usually vanishes and disappears after a few years. On average, around 7 years, one comes back to being not an ordinary young boy, but just not that much different than every other young person. From there, the person to become a Buddha, and in the suttas, I always call the person who's about to become a Buddha, from the time of their birth into this world until the time when they became enlightened and for Buddha under the Bodhi tree, for that period of years, which for the Buddha Gotama was 35 years, we call that person during that time the Bodhisattva. That's the Bodhisattva time. A person who's about on the path to become enlightened. Not there yet, but on the path. And anyway, that Bodhisattva, just remembering something from the past. What did it remember? And of course, being sort of a Western Buddhist who follows facts rather than traditions. And facts, I mean, some of the traditions or some of the teachings which one can read in the suttas. There's one of the favorite suttas, is called the Gatikara Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, where the Buddha Gotama recalls an event a long, long time ago, where there was a very poor potter called Gatikara. Gatikara actually means one who makes pots, who was a chief disciple of the previous Buddha called Kassapa. There's been one Buddha, there's been many Buddhas in the past. That is accepted in most traditions. And Kassapa had this disciple called Gatikara. And Gatikara had a friend called Jyotipala. And Jyotipala did not like Kassapa the Buddha at all, and even called him a shaving-headed good for nothing, and never wanted to go and listen to his teachings at all. And eventually Gatikara forced his friend Jyotipala to meet the Buddha, literally started dragging him by the hair. And Jyotipala said, "Wow, you're going to really extreme lengths to make me see this Buddha Kassapa." So Jyotipala decided to go and see. And as soon as Jyotipala saw Buddha Kassapa and listened to the teachings, he realized why his best friend Gatikara was such a strong disciple of Buddha Kassapa. And he had so much faith that Jyotipala decided to become a monk himself, and became a monk under the Buddha Kassapa. And when our Buddha, Buddha Gotama, told that story, he said, "That was me." He's recalling a previous life. The Buddha Gautama, a previous life under the previous Buddha, Buddha Kassapa, as a monk. So, you'd expect somebody with that degree of spiritual strength, this Jyotipala, now a monk under the Buddha Kassapa, didn't say for how many years, would have heard something, would have practiced meditation, would have penetrated some type of truth. And who knows? Like many monks say, that maybe when that Bodhisattva was born, he put his hand up and said, "This is my last life," because he knew, having been a monk under the Buddha Kassapa, that he was about to come into his last life. Anyway, fast forward 35 years into the future, when this poor young man, Siddhartha Gautama, he was wandering, he was trying all sorts of different types of meditation, different types of practices, but never really penetrating, but getting disappointed, getting frustrated, as if gone through all different types of practices and nothing worked. Does that make any sort of common themes with your practice when you're listening here? We try, we put forth effort, we go to this teacher, that teacher, we go on retreats, we study, but sometimes we get to a point of just desperate frustration. Nothing is working for you. Where can this enlightenment be? And then it was that the Buddha recalled, so the Bodhisattva recalled, an event when he was a young boy. And that event when he was a young boy, watching his father plow the fields, doing a ceremony, the plowing ceremony. And like many young boys getting bored, couldn't go and do anything else, had to sit there and watch. During that time, closing his eyes, and for the very first time of this life, entering into a jhana state. These jhanas, what we call the deep states of meditation, what are best described as stages of letting go, not attainments. Attainments give the wrong concept. Not stages of concentration. Concentration is something you do. These are states of stillness and deep, deep peace, caused by powerful, prolonged contentment. So much so that the mind doesn't move. It stops moving, becomes more and more still. And some of the deeper movements of the mind, the deeper wantings, are abandoned. They disappear. And your mind becomes more and more and more calm. More still, the body disappearing and the mind becoming almost perfectly still. And those states are not boring states, not at all. States of great bliss and joy and happiness. But he was only a 6 or 7 year old boy who didn't realize just what those experiences meant until maybe 29 years later, a 35-year-old, or about to be 35 soon, is trying hard, putting forth effort, giving his whole life to that spiritual search. Thought maybe that experience of deep meditation was the path to awakening. And the word he used in the Mahasachaka Sutta is a way to Bodhi. Bodhi means awakening. What does awakening mean? It means the mindfulness gets strong and powerful and penetrating, not ordinary mindfulness, but mindfulness where you can focus, you can stay on something and see its beauty, to see things you've never seen before in something, to look at it and see its details and its texture, and see if you can stay with something long enough, with powerful enough mind, it just opens up to you and tells you her secrets. This is life secrets, the Dhamma secrets. Only when that mindfulness is strong, when it's been awakened. So, he said, maybe that is the path to this deep awakening. And of course, he said, yeah, I think it is. So he's also the next part of this, what happened on Vaisakh, was also really important. It's a worldly thing, but it's important. The Buddha just improved his health. He ate, he washed, and he found a comfortable place to sit meditation. And what's now called Bodh Gaya, in those days Uruvela, just a park, a garden next to the river Niranjara, when there was no one around. It was next to the river so he could bathe. It was cool. It was hardly any mosquitoes or flies. He got a nice tree. Somebody just gave him some delicious food, which was supposed to be an offering for a god. But the Buddha-to-be, the Bodhisattva, was given it and ate it. A good meal, a comfortable place to sit. And there, having looked after his body, cared for it, made it comfortable, not overeating, not undereating, a nice cushion to sit on under the Bodhi tree, in the shade of that Bodhi tree, then closed his eyes, and then in deep, deep, deep meditation, letting go of everything, letting go of the whole world. And before that enlightenment happened, they have all these so-called myths, but some of these myths, and as a logical scientist, say, well, maybe some of these myths are true. And of course, after many years as being a monk, some of these things you can say, well, yeah, they are true. This demon, Mara, trying to stop the Buddha becoming enlightened. First of all, trying to attack his lust, if there's any lust in there. Putting forth visions of, because he was a male, beautiful women. Putting forth promises of power. You have so many good qualities. Forget being an enlightened Buddha. You can be a great leader of mankind, womankind, and do so much good in this world. Promising all these possibilities instead of enlightenment. But the Buddha held firm and just stopped. Stop wanting. Stop wanting to lead the world. Stop wanting to have whatever pleasures he needed. Stop wanting everything. And when you stop wanting things like that, just the mind becomes very peaceful, very still. It appears a different way than you've seen before. It gets blissful, but impenetrable. It's the jhana realms. And in those jhana realms, you stay for long periods of time. And when you emerge afterwards, what they call the five hindrances, the desires and ill will, which bend the mind to suit what you want to see and hide what is too challenging for you to see. Those hindrances of restlessness, never being able to be still enough to keep your attention at a place and really penetrate its meaning. or just too tired because you've been running around so much mentally. Those tiredness, those restlessness, that wanting, that denial, and lastly the doubt. Instead of saying, this can't be true, what's happening? You suspend that. It's just that skill which was taught to me in science. When you're doing an experiment, when you're collecting data, you suspend your doubt. Now's not the time to measure the readings coming on your equipment, to say it's good or say it's bad. Just take down the readings. Take them down without any distortion. Even though they don't seem to be possible, take them down. Record them. No doubt, just gathering the information. No, this can't be true, this can't be true. It is true. Record it, it's happening, it's there. And so that abandoning of your doubt, and you're facing the information which is coming up to you, challenging, but it's there. And in case I'm losing you, Just one of those occasions which I love mentioning to make sure that people aren't getting too bored or tired. Just a simple occasion when I came out of a really nice meditation at Jhana Grove when I was teaching a retreat over there. I went over to the toilet in the men's toilets in Jhana Grove. It's the middle cubicle, in case anyone wants to put a plaque on it. And there, just after doing what we call a number two, making a big mistake for a monk who just come out of a deep meditation, looking in the bowl. Wow! There's a very beautiful, you know, piece of feces which had just come out of me. And it was not messing around, it was just natural. Just to see how incredibly beautiful it was. To me, that was strange afterwards. Something which was supposed to be one of the most disgusting objects which a person can see, to me looked incredibly beautiful and wonderful and like a piece of art. I know that sometimes people laugh because that's their reaction, but the deeper truth of that is to see something which is usually not allowed. Not expected, which you're not supposed to see. Sometimes the truth is like that. To see beauty in something which should not be beautiful. To see ugliness in something which most people say is beautiful. All these things which a powerful mind can do tells you that's the type of mind you need to penetrate the truth. Of course, that's what the Buddha's mind was like. Having emerged from the jhanas. Such a powerful mind could look at anything. And especially, just, you know, what is this body and mind? What is suffering? What is its cause? What is this, its end, its final end? Nibbana. The Buddha became enlightened. An arahat. Liberated from all these poisons which have kept him going around samsara for so many times, uncountable times. When a person sees that, they see that what had to be done has been completed. You are enlightened. You're free. No more rebirth. Suffering of this life will come to the end of this life when the body just stops, the mind does not continue on. Everything stops. It's why it's called aparisesa parinibbana. Nibbana, complete stopping, cessation. Aparisesa means with nothing remaining. It's all gone. Finished. Stopped. Freedom at last. And the result of that, the Buddha was just peaceful for days. Still, when I first read that after the Buddha realized full enlightenment at Bodh Gaya on Vaisak Day, that he just sat there, blissed out for 7 days. Then he just stood up, just looking at the Bodhi tree under which his enlightenment was produced for another 7 days. I thought, no one can do that, just stand there, just looking. But if you know what happens when you're blissed out, when you're really still, you don't want anything. Your body, as it were, is subdued by the power of the mind. You can do such stuff. This mind is incredibly powerful. And it can overcome sort of some of the usual stuff which the body supposedly has to do. So anyway, the more that you get to know these deep states of meditation, the more you think, maybe this actually happened. And anyway, just after that, the Buddha started teaching. But before he actually started teaching, there was a time when Mara came and said, okay, Mara is a person who's, he's the head of that heavenly realm of people who control others. The Paranimitta Vasavati Devas, he's the head of that realm. And so he doesn't like people to get out of his power. And anyway, he admitted it, okay, to the Buddha, okay, you've defeated me, you're free of me, I can't control you any longer. One thing he said to the Buddha, though, which I always find important, he said, now you're a Buddha, teaching others would be such a pain in the butt. We never actually said pain in the butt, but I think you can understand what I mean. It's just so difficult teaching others. You teach them everything and they don't understand, or they argue, or they say that it can't be this, it must be that. And you teach one person and they think you're great, and so they tell their friends, and they've got to teach 2 or 3 or 4 people. It's like COVID. It becomes people contract it from you. The faith is a nice thing to be able to give. You know, faith is contagious if it really works. So anyway, the Mara said, don't teach, it'll be a pain in the butt. And he said, no, no, I'll teach for the benefit and happiness of all beings. Because, you know, it's like and the person who actually asked him to do that was Brahma Sahampati. Sahampati. You know that if you look in the suttas, you find out who was this person who came down and asked the Buddha to teach out of compassion for all other beings. And that's Sahampati. He also was a monk with the Buddha Kassapa. These are old monks from a long time before. Old friends in previous lives. And Sahampati, of being a monk under the Buddha Kassapa, he managed to get to being a non-returner, an anagami, and just hanging out in the, I'd say hanging out, but enjoying life in the Sudawasa, the pure abodes, as an anagami, a non-returner, and realizing his close friend, Gotama, was a Buddha, came down to say thank you. And to say, give his best wishes, congratulations. But also, Sahampati said, now, go and teach. There are people with little dust in their eyes. Teach for the benefit of all those beings. So the Buddha started teaching. But Mara came and said, oh, don't teach, it's difficult. He said, I've already promised I'm going to teach. Well, don't teach for too long. And that was a time when the Buddha made this promise to Mara. I will stop teaching only when the Bhikkhu Sangha, the community of ordained monks, is flourishing with many, many enlightened monks amongst them. Until the Bhikkhuni Sangha, the community of fully ordained women, Buddhist nuns, bhikkhunis, until they are flourishing, not just one or two, but hundreds, thousands, with many enlightened nuns in their midst. Until the community of lay men followers, we don't call them the Sangha, that's not the right term, the parish of following, the lay men and lay women are also flourishing with many sort of non-returners and once-returners and stream-withers in their midst. Once that is there, then I will end my teaching and enter aparisesa parinibbana, nibbana with nothing remaining. So for 45 years, the Buddha kept on teaching. And just before the Buddha passed away, 3 months before, at the Chapala shrine in Vaisali, Mara came to see him again and said, "The Bhikkhuni Sangha, the Bhikkhu Sangha, the lay men, the lay women, wow, they're really strong now. Now is the time." And the Buddha said, "Okay, yeah. I kept my promise. I've established those four groups." And 3 months later, the Buddha passed away at Kusinara. And as the Buddha passed away at Kusinara, I remember just the descriptions of so many other arahats, enlightened beings, which I read, both bhikkhunis and bhikkhus, which I read in the Theragata and Therigata, these collections of verses of enlightened beings, where they said that once a person has penetrated the Dhamma, they've seen the truth, their greed, hate and delusion and all forms and all measures is totally eradicated. They're arahats. Now they just serve. They serve the sasana, the teaching. They give the biggest gift they can possibly give, which is teaching. The Dhamma Dana is the highest gift. And they give, they serve for the benefit of all beings to keep this great, amazing, wonderful, true teaching going for so many centuries. They do that. And they're like, they say, like a workman or a workwoman just waiting for their wages. The check is in the mail, hasn't come yet. What does that mean? All it meant was the work was becoming enlightened, fully enlightened, become an arahat. Once the arahat is there, there's nothing really needed to be done except just to serve. That's not real work. That's just giving. Workmen waiting for their wages. And under the twin sal trees at Kusinara, the Buddha got his wages. Mahaparinibbana, the great ceasing. This wasn't just someone saying they've let go. This was the final act of letting go. With the Buddha, his body and his consciousnesses all stopped, never arose again. Fully free, ended. And for people who said, "Oh, where did the Buddha go afterwards?" He always tried to remind people of that wonderful simile of the Buddha which he gave to Vajragotha. A candle, are the candles behind me, especially if they're real candles with real wax, real wick, and a flame. The flame depends upon three things, three causes: the wick, the wax, and the heat. And if any one of those, just one of those, disappears, the wick is exhausted, the wax burns out, or the wind blows the heat away. What happens to the flame? The flame is extinguished. It doesn't go anywhere. It was just the product of three things, that's all. The coming together of three causes. And when any one of those causes stops, so does the effect. The Buddha was like the flame. When the physical life stopped, then so did the Buddha. Maha Parinibbana. And that's what we celebrate at Kusinara. And even though there's more people who do their celebrations on Waisak at Bodh Gaya, to me the special place will always be Kusinara. That's where fulfill the promise made at Bodh Gaya. The Buddha left samsara once and for all. Brilliant, beautiful, amazing. That's one of those three places which we remember at Waisak, full moon day at this time of the year, is so important. I did mention to Dennis earlier, this is the 50th year for me celebrating Waisak as a young Western man. 1970 was the first Waisak I ever celebrated. And that was over in Cambridge University Buddhist Society. I remember that because it's important. So please, may we all remember Waisak. Celebrate it. And see if we can learn and follow the example of the Buddha and let go, disappear, and this experience for ourselves as a man, as a woman, young, old, does not matter. This is not about your body, it's about the mind. You bring comfort to the body, you ease it, and then the mind's joy takes over, and the mind becomes still and peaceful. It lets go and disappears, stage by stage, emptying until there's nothing left, really nothing. So that's the talk for Waisak Day 2020. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, if you want to stretch a little bit, scratch or whatever you want to do, and in 2 minutes we'll start a guided sitting meditation. That will go till 10:30, and then some more people will be joining in at 10:30, so I'll give the three refuges and five precepts again, followed by the traditional blessing of Pirit, and that will be until 11 o'clock when I'll have my lunch. Okay, so I think those of you who are ready, we can actually start the guided meditation. And today's guided meditation, I've been keeping this. I don't usually plan things, but this one, I admit I'm planning this, because it was many years previously when I was over in Singapore and someone said, please, please, please come to our little centre, it's a kindergarten, and do something. And it was very close to Waisak. So can you please tell the teacher children what Waisak means? And it's very hard teaching like 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds. But that I started, well, Waisak, where the Buddha was born. When the Buddha was born, so I got all the children to walk 7 steps and put their finger up the right way round and to say, this is my last birth. As a way of acting out the birth of the Buddha.
and then the enlightenment of Bodh Gaya. I said, now, sit down. And you could see the big Buddha statue in the Singapore Buddhist kindergarten, Little Gems it was called. And said, see the Buddha statue, see if you can sit like that. He says, now right leg over the left leg, is the Burmese position. Right hand over the left hand, thumb slightly touching, back straight, chin down, close your eyes. And then I taught them through imagining they were the Buddha, just enlightened. And that was so powerful, not just for the kids, because they were so quiet, even for me teaching it, and for the parents who were also there. It was so good, they asked me that evening, can you do that again, please, for us? And that's exactly what I'm going to do for everyone today. So, it's only going to be for 25 minutes, so be prepared. Sit down in your meditation posture. If you are sick and need to lay on the ground or lean against the wall with your feet out, that's fine. One advantage of not being in this hall is no one is looking at you. So you can point your feet anywhere and you won't get told off. It's very difficult sometimes. You have this rule, you can't point your feet at the Buddha, but in some places, the Buddha's all over the place. Any direction you point your feet, you're pointing at some Buddha somewhere. So anyway, close your eyes. And quickly just bring awareness onto your body. Making sure your body is comfortable. As best you can. It will never be perfectly comfortable, but you can make it better. The mindfulness, together with the kindness, making kindfulness. Such a powerful way of looking at your own body. And make a special emphasis on the kindness. Please care for your body. So your body knows it's being cared for. You know what it's like for you if you're in a home and no one really cares for you? Or you live by yourself, or you go to work and you feel like people are exploiting you, they don't really care for you. Imagine what your body feels sometimes. You exploit it, you don't really care for it. So when I start meditating, oh, I really care for my body. Making sure it's really nice. That was nice. Stretching my back. And then, once my body is reasonably comfortable, I use my powers of imagination. I remember as a kid at primary school, the teacher said, imagine you're a tree. I put my hand out and imagine just drifting in the wind like a tree does. But don't imagine you're a tree. Just imagine you were the Buddha. You're the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree on Vaisak so many years ago. Sitting there, all you can hear is the sound of the birds in the Bodh Gaya Grove. You're under the cool shade of a Bodhi tree. Maybe you can imagine the sound of the water in the great river Nilanjana. Just a few meters away from where you're sitting. Under your body is a nice cushion of grass. You've had a good meal that morning, there's no hunger, or the day before.
It's early in the morning. You are enlightened. You're the Buddha. Imagine what that must feel like. You have nothing more to be done. Everything that was sought after, you found. And what you have is not like any ordinary treasure. It does not need to be protected. It cannot be lost. How can you lose? Nothing. Who can manage to put emptiness in a box and carry it away? For you have experienced something which belongs to no one, but is also yours, if there was a you to own it. You're free. Not anything to worry about in the whole world. No one can add anything to you, nor can they take anything away. What they say about you, praise or blame, just like wind just going through empty spaces, it makes nothing move, nothing rustles. You're just sitting there, free. You own nothing. There's no more owners. You don't have to be proud. There's no one here to be proud. To be afraid. There's nothing left to lose. Everything is gone. Like you've been carrying this big heavy suitcase or backpack for 35 years. Now it's vanished. It's not here now. It will never be back again. You're sitting here, feeling the warm sun on your skin. With nothing left to do in the whole world. All your jobs and tasks have been completed. Everything on your list, on your list of lists, disappeared. Can never come up again. Like all of the information, emails, passwords on your data bank in your computers is all deleted. Deleted forever. You're free. No one to bother you. You have no burdens, no business. Nothing to be done. You're just sitting here like a Buddha under the Bodhi tree. How does that feel? See if you can take that feeling and make it more solid. Many times people meditate trying to get something or try and get rid of something, wanting to attain wanting to be better. All those wantings are gone. Like a Buddha, there's nothing to improve. It's perfect as it is. No fault other than what's part of nature, which you cannot fix up. There's no need to pretend anymore. This is real. The perfection is not changing things. Perfection is letting this be, leaving it alone. It's perfect already. And if you look in your body, there's no tightness, no tension. Here in this room I can hear a helicopter in the distance, or it could be a plane. It's perfect. Welcome. If you want to get rid of sound and fight it, if you want to get something, it's disturbing you from getting somewhere. You don't know where to go. Nothing to attain. Nothing to get rid of. Totally this moment. Free of desire. It's nothing worth wanting anymore. Imagine, you're enlightened. You're free. Praise and blame, it's just sound. That young child would say, it's not blame which disturbs you. You disturb the blame. It's a sound. Nothing tensing up in your body or in your mind. You tense up trying to avoid things. Or getting ready to chase something. When there's nothing to search for. When there's nothing which you have to get rid of. And this is perfect in its most complete sense. There's no source for wanting. There's no cause or condition for ill will. The mind just is. Not wanting anything, not getting rid of anything. And you observe your mind gets so peaceful. There's so many obstacles which you normally see, feel, know, they vanish, they're not there anymore. What had to be done has been done. The journey is complete. Nowhere to go. Nothing to be. Imagine you're under the Bodhi tree, alone, but not missing anything. Even you are disappearing. So much freedom.
so much rest, the ease. You're like a workman, workwoman. Finish the job. And don't look for any more work. Perfectly at peace. Sitting with the body that's already been well fed. And the mind. There's no extra to be learnt or known. Nothing more to be done. Free of all wanting. Free of all judging. All these forces which kept the wheel of samsara rolling around are gone for you. Just a peace. I will be quiet for about 5 or 6 minutes.
How do you feel now? How is your meditation feel? How much peace and inner freedom do you feel? Sometimes using this Buddha sati, mindfulness of a Buddha in this particular way, sometimes you get such a feeling of freedom. It's like a taste of nirvana. The mind's so content, it's hardly there. As you start to come out from the mind back into your body, feel this body just so relaxed, so at ease. Any aches and pains which may have been there before, can't find them. Body appreciates having a quiet mind. Now we'll ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation, as usual.
I really enjoy that. Anyway, now the next part of this morning's ceremony, we try and link it up to how we usually celebrate Vaisak when there's lots and lots and lots of people here. And many people, you know, would like blessings. And before they do the blessings, the people who come a little bit later, I would like to take those 3 refuges and the 5 precepts. And then we give the traditional pivot, which is that protecting chants. And those protecting chants, I mean, I've seen it work so many times. And sometimes that when we feel that, this is just superstition, you may think like that. But then after a while you find it has a power to it. And some of those chants, pivoted chants which I've given in the past, especially after a really nice meditation like we just had, some of those chants, they do have power. And it's the power, obviously, later on in another 5 or 10 minutes, is for the happiness and well-being of all people, Buddhists, non-Buddhists, especially on this day, to keep them free as best as possible from COVID and all the other diseases and misfortunes of life. When those misfortunes or diseases do happen, please treat them as opportunities to grow in wisdom and letting go. And opportunities for those of us who are healthy to serve, to give. If we didn't have people who needed it, there'd be no point to give dana. So thank you for those people who are sick, so we can serve. But first of all, we have the 3 refuges and 5 precepts again, similar to how we did it before.
I'll do the Namo Tassa first of all. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Which is homage to the Buddha, fully enlightened one. And now the three refuges. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. I take refuge to the Buddha. I take refuge with the Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. I take refuge to the Buddha. I take refuge with the Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. For the third time, I take refuge to the Buddha. Take refuge with the Dhamma. Take refuge in the Sangha. That completes the three refuges. But now, chant, give the five precepts. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi. I undertake the precept to refrain from intentionally killing living beings. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking what is not given, from stealing. Kāmesu micchācara viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. Musāvādā viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi. I undertake the precept to refrain from lying. Sura miraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking alcohol, that's drinking it, imbibing it, or non-medicinal drugs which distort my mind and create heedfulness in me, heedlessness in me. Now the blessing for those who take the five precepts. Idani panchasika padani sirena sukhatin yanti sirena bhoga sampada sirena niputin yanti tasama sirang visodaye. These five precepts, they lead to happy abidings, lead to wealth. They lead to nibbana, to cessation. Therefore, please, keep these precepts purely. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And usually after giving the three refuges and the five precepts, now we have the paritta blessing, which we usually give at this time. Usually there's many monks and nuns give this paritta all together. But I'll just be imagining the monks which I share the monastery with and the nuns as well, the bhikkhunis. I can imagine them sitting next to me as I do the paritta chant, which will last about 15 minutes for the happiness, benefit, blessings, good health of all the people who have the good fortune to hear it.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Yo cakkhuma mohamalapakado samang vabuddho sukhato vimutto. Mavasapasa vinimocayanto papesikemang janatang vinayang buddhang varantang sivasanamaya lokasapapu pakilesanancha. Tante ca sate jaya siddhi hotu sabantaraya ca vinasamentu dhammo dajoyo viyatasa satu dase siloka sapvinasayanto Pape sikhe mang janatang vinayang buddham mang varantang sirasanamaya mohapadalak vinajajayantang tante jasate jaya siddhi hotu Sabantaraya Chavinasamentu Sadamasena Sukatanugoyo Lokasapapu Pakilesa Jeta Santo Sayang Santiniyo Jakocha Suvakata dhammang viditang karanti Sankhang varantang sirasanamami Buddhanubuddhang samasiladiting Tante jasate jaya siddhi hotu Sabantavaya Chavina Samentu Namo Arahato Samma Sambuddha Samahesino Namo Uttama Dhamma Sasuva Kata Sevate Nidanamo Mahasangha Sapi Visuddha Sila Ditino Namo Omataya Vadasavatanatayasa Sadukang Namo Omakati Tasa Tasa Watutaya Sapi Namo Kava Pabawe Nawiga Chantu Upadawa Namo Kava Nubawe Nasuwati Hotu Sabada Namo Kava Sate Jena Vidim Hihomi Tejawa Asewana Chabalanang Panditanan Chasewana Puja Chapujaniana Etamangalamutamang Patirupadesawaso Chapube Chakata punyata ata samma paniti cha eta mangala mutamang bahu satchan cha si pancha vinayo cha susikito subhasita cha yavacha eta mangala mutamang Mata pitu upatana putadavasa sangaho anakula chakamanta etama galamutamang danancha dhamma chariyata yata kanancha sangaho Anavajani kamani etam mangalam uttamang Arati virati papamajapana chasanyamo apamado chadamesu etam mangalam uttamang gavavo Chaniwato chasantuti chakatan yuta Kalena dhamma savanang etam mangalam uttamang Kanti chasova chasata samananang chadasanang Kalena dhamma sakaccha etam mangalam uttamang Tapocha brahmachariyancha ariyasachanadasanang Nibbana sachikiriyacha etam mangalam uttamang Puthasa lokadamehi Chitang yasana kampati asokang virajang kemang etam mangalam uttamang etadisani katvana sabbatama parajita sabbata sotin gacchanti tantesang Mangalam uttamanti Yang kinshi vittang ida vahu vangva Sagesu vayang ratanang panitang Nano samang atita tagatena Idampi buddhe ratanang panitang Etena sachena suvati hotu Kayang viragang amatang panitang yada jaga sakya muni samahito na te na dhamme na samati kinchi idam pidamme ratanang panitang etena sacena suvati hotu yam buddha seto pariwana isu ching samadhi manantari kanyamahu samadhina tena samona vijati idam pidamme ratanang panitang etena sacena suvati hotu ye pugala atasatang pasatha chatari etani yugani honti te dakineya sukata sasavaka ete sudinani Mahapalani dampi sange ratanang panitang etena sacena suvati hotu ye supayuta manasa dalhena nikamino gotama sasanamhi te patipatta amatang vikaha Lada muda ni puting bunjamana idam pisanghe ratanang panitang etena sacena suvati hotu kinang puranang navang nati sambhavang Virata chitaya tike bhavasming te kina bija avirulhi chandani banti dira yatayang padipo idampi sange ratanang panitang etena sacena suvati hotu Metancha sabalokasming manasambhavaye aparimanang udangado chatiriyancha sambhadang avivak asapatang titancharang nisino va sayano va Yavatasa vikatamido etang sating aditeya brahma metang vihara idamahuditincha anupagama silavadasanena sampano kamesu vineya gedang Nahi jatu gabaseya punaretiti Itipiso bhagava alahang sama Sambuddho vijacharana sampano Sugato loka vidu Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati sata deva manusana buddho bhagavati suva kato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehipasiko opanayiko pachatang Veditabo vinyu hiti supatipano bhagavato savaka sango ujupatipano bhagavato savaka sango yaya patipano bhagavato savaka sango Samichi patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho yadidam chatari Purisa yugani atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato savaka sango ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anuttarang punya ketang lokasati. Nati me saranang anyang, buddho me saranang varang, etena satcha vajena, sotite hota sabada. Nati me saranang anyang, dhammo me saranang varang, etena satcha vajena sotite hota sabada. Nati me saranang anyang sangho me saranang varang etena satcha vajena sotite hota sabada. May you all be happy, well, healthy body and good life in order to practice the Dhamma and realize Nibbana in this very life. Well, that completes the period chart, and our president, Dennis, is still here. Would you like just to say a few words to finish off this morning session? Be nice.
Buddha promised to bring into existence before he died. And what a wonderful thing. And when I look at this centre, that's what I see here. I see the four pillars of our wonderful Buddhist organisation working so well together. We've got monasteries now that are growing everywhere, mainly because of the fine work that Ajahn Brahm does here. We've got a worldwide reach with our internet from the wonderful work that our AV team does. And I might just give a plug too to Sol and Taz and all the other people that sort of keep this website that we've got to keep it healthy and to keep it running so smoothly. I'm just looking over here at Eddie. Eddie's been calling me last night because he was concerned about how this centre might look, whether you'd be able to feel the joy and the happiness that sort of goes into a lot of the things. If you just look at the stage here that's that Eddie has prepared here for us with all of the lights that Ajahn Brahm is sitting in. It really just gives you an idea of the wonderful feeling. That the emotional feeling that is here, that our members want to convey to the world. I would also just like to mention our committee, because this year we haven't been able to have an annual general meeting. So the committee have just really soldiered on. We're probably going to be doing something about that soon that we'll let you know about as time goes on. But just the committee, especially the executive committee, our treasurer, the vice president, the secretary, how hard they all work. And then Bill Prinz is around here somewhere, looking after the security of this place and looking after the whole Dharmaloka centre here. We're in the process, too, of starting up a care group That will be coming to you fairly soon. So really the Buddhist Society is, we're so motivated, so interested to bring you these Buddhist teachings, the Buddhist teachings that just thinking about the Four Noble Truths, just what a wonderful set of stanzas they are, the Four Noble Truths. And I'm just, as I'm thinking about this COVID crisis that the whole world's involved in, we're all locked down and where we're not able to do the usual things that we are able to do, but it really does give us a really good idea of just what this First Noble Truth of dukkha really means. Because oftentimes that can get a bit disguised, can't it? Because we kind of follow along with our lives and what we're doing, and you know, sometimes you don't see the suffering. Sometimes it's hard to see just what dukkha means. But it's in a time like this that we really do get the chance to reflect, to be able to see that this world is not satisfactory, that there is this dukkha that's really at the heart of all of our beings. And this is really what Ajahn Brahma's been so eloquently able to sort of show and teach, and especially in this morning's wonderful talk that he gave. So just seeing and understanding that first noble truth, just that dukkha, so that we know that with this, what the Buddha's teaching here, what the Buddha's showing us, is truthful. It's congruent, it's relevant, and most of all, it's beautiful. Once you start to sort of notice, and you're able to sort of see some of the stillness and the peace that Ajahn Brahma is talking about here this morning, you can really know, beyond any doubt, that this is a beautiful, truthful process that we've involved in. Buddhism is not necessarily just for Buddhists. It really is something that's there, I think, as Ajahn Brahm sort of knows too, as a scientist. It's just there as a truth. This is a truth. It's not necessarily even, I mean, some people argue that, you know, Buddhism isn't a religion. I mean, personally, I like to think of it as a religion. But Buddhism has this truth, this beauty, this freedom from dukkha, to be able to sort of use the key to allow ourselves to be free, from desire, as Ajahn Brahm has so eloquently said this morning. So we've got a full program again for this afternoon, starting at 3 o'clock. We're going to be going from 3 until 5:30, and we'll also be doing a circumambulation, and the AV team are very excited today because we've got new cameras to be able to sort of walk, to go outside and show you around the centre. So without further ado, I'll allow Ajahn Brahm now to go and have his meal.
Very good.
And we'll see you again at 3 o'clock today. So thank you very much for your attendance.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Thank you, Dennis.
In Magnolia Street, we had a house there that we'd bought, and I was just telling you the story before, a very happy circumstance, and maybe just mention Warren Smiles and his wife, who originally put the money up for us to be, or put their house on the line as collateral for a loan that we took out to buy that particular house, because we had no money, but there was a group of people that had a great inclination to want to start the Buddhist Society. So, you know, with Warren's generosity and his wife's and their courage in doing that, we were able to get a house, and that's really what started the Buddhist Society off. Yeah, and then, of course, the rest was history with that, with Lynn and a couple of others, a man called Vichai and another person whose name escapes me, I think, went to Thailand to ask Zanchar if he could send monks.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how it started. We had the house and we had a sort of a membership. We didn't know much about how to look after monks. We had no idea. But we had decided, though, to go down the Theravadan line, the Theravadan way of practicing. Previous to that, we had all sorts. It was a licorice, all sorts of teachers that we had along, people from the Zen Center. But I probably should also mention too Prakanti Palo, who used to come to the center well before we had monks from our own monks come. He used to come from Sydney, from Wat Buddha Dharma. And he treated Perth as his diocese in a way, and we had many retreats with him, and I can remember many happy times and deepening Buddhist practice with him. I think he's now disrobed. Just trying to think of his name now. It's Lawrence, I think.
Yeah,
Lawrence is.
Lawrence
Nils. Yeah. So, but then. It was on that happy day that we had two monks from Ajahn Chah's monastery come, and it was really the rest is history, really, from there.
Okay. Well, but you have been involved with the Buddhist Society a lot, so I mean, it is a history, but you know, history doesn't happen. History also needs kind of involvement all the time. You have to sort of keep things going, and etc. You need people to take charge, you need people to be involved, you need people to take responsibilities. And can you say a bit more about your kind of involvement with the Buddhist Society over the years and the things that you have taken part in?
Well, I think first of all, with the house, I think that my main involvement there at that point, I mean, it wasn't that, because I was actually sucking like a sponge, sort of sucking everything. And I'm very grateful to all of the lay people that were teaching then at the time as well. But then when the monks came, I mean, that was a different thing. And I just think back to my poor wife at the time too, Diane, because I would spend nearly, good, sometimes 5 nights a week or 6 nights a week over there at the house, meditating with the monks and, listening to the stories, hearing all about the Buddha, and just really deepening the practice. But I wasn't so much involved in the committee or the running of things there. But Ajahn Jagaro targeted me, I think, as someone working in the building profession. So I remember that I was involved in the organisation of extending the shrine room there. And we had the little statue that we've got in one of the side rooms here was the statue that we had there in Magnolia Street, sitting up just in a very small room. But I suppose it could fit in about 30, 40 people. And it was always full, and sometimes bursting out of the doors and into the hallways. Sometimes, especially the hot days, we'd sit out on the back lawn. There was a bit of a slope up on the back lawn, and, we used to sit on the lawn and listen to the Dharma. And meditate out there too on some of the warm nights. It was always a bit of a problem in there though too, because we had neighbours, and I remember there was one neighbour that used to like to have his television very loud, so on Friday nights for meditation you could sort of sit and do meditation, but you'd also be listening to Rumpole of the Bailey at the same at the same time, until the Buddhist Society banded together and we bought him a little earpiece to put into his TV to... Yeah, but I found that practice very instructive for myself though, because it never worried me. I mean, a lot of people don't like that sort of distraction, but I was able to somehow, I think that was the first part for me in learning how to keep your mind still and just focus. Even while I was well aware of the noise, you couldn't not be aware of the noise, but it just, you learnt not to let it bother you, and just you sort of stay with the mind as it got still.
Yeah.
So from there, from the time that we moved over here to Nollamara, you know, I've been I've had several terms as president. This is the third epoch, if you like. You usually take on the term for a few years each time. I've also been vice president. I remember I was vice president for Jill Hannah when she was president. I thought she was a wonderful president too. We've had lots of really good women presidents over the years, actually, too. It's just been something very natural for women to fall into, I think. Buddhist hierarchy, it seems to work quite well. And now, of course, we've got our nuns, nuns in the nuns' monastery. But the very first thing that we're all interested in involved in is to get a monastery working. I suppose I could sort of tell you some stories too, just about how unprepared we were as lay people to look after monks. I mean, I know that when Lynn went and invited Ajahn Chah to send monks over, we were overjoyed, but we really had no idea, because the Thai community wasn't necessarily as strong then as what it is now, of course, and they all know, you know, intimately how to look after monks and nuns, but we weren't quite that way. So there were plenty of times, I think, when when the monks probably went hungry on days, you know, their one meal. There was times I know when with Ajahn Jagaro and Ajahn Brahm, when he was here as the junior to Ajahn Jagaro, they knew that they had food in the fridge, but they couldn't take it because there'd been no lay people to turn up to offer it to the house. It had been forgotten or something like that. And indeed, I was just mentioning before to you about, I remember one time taking Ajahn Brahm out. I think it was, I had to take him to a funeral or something like that in the morning, somewhere over in East Fremantle, maybe the East Fremantle Cemetery. But I was driving him back, and when we got back, it was about 10 to 12, and sort of Jagaro was sort of saying, "Did you have lunch?" And Brahm said, no, I didn't have lunch. And it didn't even sort of enter my mind to, I'd had my breakfast in the morning. But, you know, it was the role of the monk, apparently, not to sort of say anything either. So Ajahn Brahm never said anything, I haven't had dinner yet, there was no reminders of that. So it was a mad scramble to get a few things out of the fridge to allow him to eat for what was only just a few minutes left before he wasn't allowed to eat anymore. So these sorts of things were no doubt very difficult for the monks, and probably why Venerable Peruso ended up heading back to Bangkok, and he was replaced by Ajahn Brahm. And what a monk, you know, he turned out to be, really. When he came, he was skinny. He was, and I mean really quite, you know, very, very thin and very, very quiet, you know, like he didn't really ever say too much. But Ajahn Jagaro had told me before he came, because Peruso had gone back, and then we knew that we had a new monk coming. But Ajahn Jagaro said to me, he said, "Dennis, you wait till this new monk arrives. You wait until he arrives. This man is a monk's monk." So it was very clear that we were getting a man who was very very well regarded by his peers, and it was really quite wonderful to hear that. Ajahn Jagaro was very excited to have Ajahn Brahm come. And Ajahn Brahm turned out to be a very, even though in those first few years he was a very quiet man, but he always sort of had this sort of a sense of humour that he maybe kept a little bit quiet.